So the vigilant people amongst you will have realised that PEACH doesn't actually stand for Proactive Healthcare of Older People in Care Homes. It doesn't spell that at all. But if you're very, very careful, you can put the word PEACH together from some of the letters that are in the words that make up the project title. And once you've got a catchy project acronym, you're kind of stuck with it. The other reason for doing it was it allowed us to have this very nice little logo that appears in the bottom left-hand side there, two hands shaking across the front of a peach, which I think sort of nicely sort of expresses the sort of spirit of cooperation that sat around this work and the different sort of groups and agendas we brought together as we did it. Now, I'm putting up my disclaimer slide just to say that if I say anything stupid, it's me. And if I say anything unbelievably witty and intelligent, it's all thanks to the Dunhill Medical Trust. But seriously, the piece of work that's done here, and you'll get a flavour of this as you go through, is really quite the sort of thing that a lot of funders would be challenged by. It's programmatic, it brings together quality improvement, there are components of different types of research all sitting together, and I think it's a real testament to the vision that the trustees had when they put together this programme that they've been able to fund this and that we've been able to do it. So that is, as well as being a disclaimer slide, that's really a thanks slide. I also need to put up the standard sort of accreditation slide, and you'll see here that you have a cast of thousands, but these are a number of really leading experts in the care home sector that have been working with us on this project. They're all co-applicants or staff members working on this study, and again, if I say anything sensible, it's all down to them rather than me. So just let's start with a bit of background. There's a lot of care home residents in the UK. Well, this is actually England alone. There's about 450,000 registered care home beds. Now, it depends on what studies you read as to whether it's 415,000, 425,000 or 435,000, because the number of people in those beds at any point in time shifts around. But if you go into the CQC database, there are 450,000 registered care home beds in England. That's three times the size of the acute hospital sector. I mean, so when you think about it, the amount of money and time and resource we devote to the acute hospital sector and how little time and money and resource we devote to the care home sector, which is three times the size, it's probably an underrepresented and under-recognised sector. And the people that live there are very frail. So this is data that comes from a cohort study that we published back in 2014 before we did PEACH. But the average number of diagnoses of people living in a care home is 6.2, with at least two long-term conditions for each care home resident. The median number of medications taken by a care home resident is 8. And interestingly, in this cohort study, the range of medications range from 0 to 32. Imagine what it must be like to take 32 medications in a 24-hour period. Two-thirds of care home residents have some form of behavioural symptom associated with the prevalent dementia that care home residents are affected by. Up to 80% of care home residents have some form of cognitive impairment. 30% are malnourished, and that's not to imply any form of mistreatment by the care home staff, but rather that these are frail people who are approaching the end of their life and often have malnutrition for medical or physiological reasons, and a further 56 are at risk of malnutrition. And the average life expectancy is quite short, 1 year for nursing homes, 2 years for residential homes. Now that belies a slightly more complicated picture where some people come to the sector quite unwell and die quite rapidly, and other people come and live for a long period of time. But it does average out at around about that time, and if you think about it, that the NHS recommends that you should be regarded as being at the end of your life when you're in the last year of your life, it really means that most of the people living in this sector should be considered for some form of end-of-life care. If you went back a decade to when I started working in care homes, the sort of model of healthcare provision to care homes was very chaotic. It was primarily dependent upon general practitioners, and it was really ad hoc and chaotic. It was dependent upon people having a medical crisis, the doctor being called, and the doctor coming out to help them. And that led to massive inequity in the quality of care across the care home sector. Things are probably getting better. NHS England has really started to waken up over the last decade to the issue that's represented by the care home sector. There were a number, as part of the NHS five-year forward view, of vanguard projects based in the care home sector that really experimented with new models of delivering care to care homes. And for those of you that have read the NHS long-term plan, you'll recognise that the plan for the future is to roll out this model of care here, the framework for enhanced health in care homes, to every care home in England. Okay? What's in enhanced care and care, enhanced health and care homes? Well, there's a whole heap of stuff. A lot of it's to do with how GPs are aligned to care homes and the type of care that they require. But there's some stuff around access to multidisciplinary teams, reablement and rehabilitation, and also to partnership working with the care home sector so that we're not designing things for the care home sector, rather we're designing it with the care home sector and understanding the expertise they have in caring for the residents that live there. And that's all good and well if you're a commissioner or you're a policymaker and you're trying to work out how to structure healthcare for people living in care homes. But if you're actually trying to work out the nitty-gritty of how to care for people living in care homes on a daily basis, that doesn't give you the specifics. It doesn't tell you how to operationalise day-to-day care. And that was really where we were starting from when we wrote up the plan for the Peach Study. You saw me presenting just a slide ago the data from the cohort data that showed that this is a dependent population with prominent cognitive impairment who are approaching the end of life and are subject to polypharmacy. And if you ask any geriatrician in the country what the correct model of care is for that, they'll give you one answer. And the answer they'll give you is comprehensive geriatric assessment. Now, say, ask a geriatrician, this is what you'll get. Ask a general practitioner and you might get something a little bit different, and we'll come back to that in a bit. But I was writing this from the perspective of an academic geriatrician, and I thought that possibly comprehensive geriatric assessment had a role to play here. The things that are different about comprehensive geriatric assessment from, by comparison with routine and traditional models of healthcare, is it doesn't focus upon diagnosis, differential diagnosis, treatment and cure. Instead, it says that if you're older and you're subject to frailty and you have complex health problems, you need to be assessed from a number of different sort of angles. You need detailed physical assessment, psychological assessment, functional assessment, your ability to conduct your activities of daily living, and also an assessment of your social support mechanisms and how you interact with your environment. This is usually delivered by a multidisciplinary team. The core multidisciplinary team usually includes some sort of representative of the nursing profession, some sort of representative of the medical profession, and some input from therapists with expertise in assessing for rehabilitation and providing rehabilitation. And the last important thing about comprehensive geriatric assessment is that it's a misnomer. So it says in the title, comprehensive geriatric assessment, and actually if you look at the research literature on this stuff, it's not about assessment at all. It's about assessment, implementing a care plan, and delivering it in an iterative way. So comprehensive geriatric assessment is, in a nutshell, multi-domain, multidisciplinary assessment to drive complex care planning and care delivery, which is then iterative. So you come back to it time and time again. And it works when you use it in the acute hospital sector. So if you look at randomised controlled trials of comprehensive geriatric assessment by comparison with usual care in the hospital sector, and there have been 4 or 5 Cochrane reviews published on this now, if you have comprehensive geriatric assessment, you are less likely to be dead, more likely to be living at home, more likely to be functionally intact, and more likely to be cognitively intact than if you didn't have it. So it works. And the number needed to treat is somewhere in the region of 14. So you only need to give this to 14 people for one person to demonstrate some form of measurable benefit. And we said, well, you know, this is probably what's needed in the care home sector, a model of structured care with multidisciplinary input and coordinated care planning. And so we set some specific objectives for the Peach Study. And we said we wanted to develop a more detailed understanding of whether and how comprehensive geriatric assessment works in care home settings. There's a reasonable literature base in comprehensive models of care in care homes from other countries, from the US, from the Netherlands, and there's some early work from the UK looking at this type of care being delivered. We then wanted to run a quality improvement collaborative to implement comprehensive geriatric assessment in care homes and then learn how to do it. And we also wanted to develop an electronic dashboard to support the quality improvement collaboratives in care homes. So if anybody in the room is interested in quality improvement, you'll know that whenever you speak to a quality improvement person, they tell you that you need to measure the impact of the quality improvement so that you can show that you're making a difference and so that you can continue to move in the right direction. So this was essentially about understanding how to do CGA, understanding how to do quality improvement at the interface between health and social care, and providing a piece of measurement, a measurement utensil to allow people to make sense of what it was that was going on. That's how we laid it out. In reality, things often work the opposite way around from how you think they're going to work. And so rather than starting with the first objective there, I'm going to start with the third objective, because actually the thing that we got to work on most quickly was this idea of developing a dashboard. Now, one of the issues when we started looking at how we could provide quality data on care home residents and how they interacted with health services was that actually it's very difficult to find care home residents within healthcare services. If you go to a hospital database, you go to a GP database, there is no one flag that says that someone is in a care home. There's no box that a GP or a hospital can click to say that someone's in a care home. Previous work that's been done in the field, and there's been quite a few papers published by the Nuffield Trust on this, have used a very simple approach, which is that they look at the postcode of a person, they see if that postcode matches the postcode of a care home, and if it does, they tag them as a care home resident. Now, I don't know what care homes are like where you live, but where I live, the care homes tend to be dotted in amongst lots of normal residential housing that also share the same postcode, and often those residential houses, because of where the care homes are located, are also full of older people who are frail. And so this tends to be a relatively non-specific way of identifying people with care homes, from care homes. And there have been studies showing that up to a third of people that are classified as living in a care home using this methodology might not actually live in a care home. So we thought maybe we ought to be better at finding who lives in a care home so that we can then build a dashboard showing how they use healthcare services. And we've published this work as a paper, and it's an Age in Ageing. You can go and look this up. But in summary, what we did was we decided, because we knew most about hospital databases, we'd start, and a lot of the variables that people were wanting to know when they were doing improvement work for care homes was about how care home residents interacted with hospitals, how often they came to hospitals, how often they came to outpatients, how often they were admitted to hospital. We'd start working with hospital databases, and we started with the database from Nottingham University Hospitals. And we worked with some computer scientists, and they effectively came up with an automated computer algorithm that does a few things. One is that it goes into the database and searches the address line of someone's address for keywords that might indicate they're from a nursing home, nursing, residential, care. The second thing it does is it looks at their postcode. The third thing it does is it actually looks at the long text of their address, and then it puts this together into a string of text, which it then matches against a CQC database. So instead of just using postcode, it's using postcode plus a number of other variables to try and increase the accuracy. We developed this and we validated this in 2,000 residents from Nottingham University Hospitals, and then in order to validate it, we thought, well, we better use a data set that we haven't developed it in, so we got another 2,000 residents over the, another 2,000 patients over the age of 85 from Nottingham University Hospitals, and then we thought, well, maybe we don't want to be just tied to one hospital here, so we also look at people in another hospital. So we sent our data analyst 30 miles north to Sherwood Forest Hospitals, which is a completely separate trust with a completely separate and different patient administration system, and we did some more validation work with 2,000 residents there. So we had 4,000 patients aged 85 years and over 2,000 from Nottingham University Hospitals, 2,000 from Sherwood Forest Hospitals. And the good news was that our algorithm was much more sensitive and specific than had previously been published for the Nuffield method. The bad news was that in our hands, the Nuffield method was much, much better than had previously been demonstrated in publication. So our algorithm worked pretty darn well, but the Nuffield method probably wasn't as bad as people had reported it to be. But by this point, we'd already embedded our algorithm in our hospital systems. We'd been developing it and embedding it as we went along. And so we decided that we'd use this as the basis of developing the care home dashboard. And what we've done using the algorithm is we've now developed some prototype care home dashboards that our improvement teams could use when they were actually trying to improve healthcare in care homes to understand how care home residents were interacting with acute hospitals. And I'll show you some screenshots from this, and you'll see at the top of each screenshot it says that this is dummy data, so I'm actually not giving away any secrets about what happens at Nottingham University Hospitals. This is entirely made up data that we've put in just to illustrate how the dashboards look. But this is an example of the sort of overview page from the dashboard. It covers the four clinical commissioning group areas that were involved in the PEACH project, and it allows those four CCGs to see how many sort of hospital contacts each of the care home residents in their area has had. The next page is about how often care home residents are using services, and you can see what it does is month by month pulls together data on how care home residents are using emergency admissions, how they're using the emergency department, so the emergency department would be people who have come in but then gone home, and how they've been contacting and using the ambulance service. For those of you that are into quality improvement, you'll recognise the next slide is something called a statistical process control chart, and this is what improvement scientists often use to understand whether there's a trend in their data over time, and the dashboard generates this for each of the variables that are contained within it. And it can then drill down and give you really quite detailed data. So this is for emergency admissions, and you can see it gives, has data in the top left-hand corner of which department people and which sector of the health service people have been admitted from, when they're presenting to the emergency department, and the types of conditions that they have. And here is... my two screens are slightly out of sync here, apologies. And here's the same for the emergency department. So that last one was emergency admissions, and this one is emergency attendances. Yeah? So you can imagine if you're an improvement team and you're working with care homes and you're trying to deliver the type of care that might be more proactive, more structured, better able to anticipate functional decline, this gives you a resource which can track NHS resource use over time and can be used as a way of recording some outcome measures that might be seen to be important. And we introduced that prototype to all of the people that were involved in the improvement programme. We'll tell you more about that in a minute. But there's been a few sort of more concrete implementations of the algorithm since we developed it. One is, as I said, Nottingham University Hospitals have now embedded it in their system, and what they now generate for their local commissioners are monthly reports of care home admissions. So they actually generate a monthly report that goes to the commissioners telling them with much greater degree of accuracy than we were previously able to do how many care home residents are using the services. And that's important because Nottingham is a vanguard site for care homes, and it's been priding itself on being ahead of the curve, and it's very important that it has reliable data to work on. Local GPs told us that they were interested in actually being able to get data on how many care home residents they had on their books and how they were behaving, and our local GPs use a system called eHealthScope, which is a different type of computer system, and again we've been able to embed the algorithm in that, so they now have much better access to reliable data. And perhaps most interestingly, a number of other academic groups, so the West Midlands Academic Health Sciences Network are doing some improvement work in care homes, and they've licensed the algorithm so that they can use it as part of that to understand how their initiatives affecting care home service use. And Yorkshire and Humber Clark, some people that are looking at emergency admissions across the Yorkshire and Humber footprint, wanted to be able to better identify care home residents within them, and again are using the algorithm. So the algorithm seems to work quite well. It can power really quite useful dashboards. So the next question that we'd asked was, how does comprehensive geriatric assessment work in care homes? And before I go on to talk about this part, I should sort of show you an overarching slide which explains a little bit of what's to follow. If I just put this on the board as it is, how many of you recognise what I'm showing you here? One person. Two people. Okay. Oh, so the number's going up. Yeah, well, you should recognise it. The number's going up all the time. But maybe three or four people in the room. This is a context mechanism outcome configuration, which sounds quite technical. But really, it's a way of explaining how it is that complex systems operate. Yeah, and it's part of something called realist inquiry. Realist inquiry says that the outcomes that you can measure from a complex system happen as a consequence of particular mechanisms that are going on within a system, and those are triggered by context. I'll give you some examples as we're going through, and you'll start to understand. But what this does is, when we're looking for ways to explain why things happen the way they do within healthcare systems, it gives us a really critical and structured lens that we can approach the literature or qualitative data from empirical studies through. And this drove the next two parts of our work. So the first part it was involved in was this business here of how does comprehensive geriatric assessment work in care homes? And I said to you before that there were a number of reports in the grey literature and also some published articles from other countries which described comprehensive geriatric assessment type approaches and how they might influence outcomes for older people living in care homes. So this is a literature review. But rather than being a systematic review of the type that many of you will be used to be seeing, it was about teasing out those context mechanisms and outcomes and how they influenced what was happening around comprehensive geriatric assessment in care homes. This is our PRISMA diagram. This tells you how we approached the literature. And you can see that we ended up with 110 articles, of which 21 were really about the day-to-day nitty-gritty of delivering care. And we used an iterative approach to those articles to really start to develop our context mechanism outcome configurations and build them into a programme theory of how comprehensive geriatric assessment works in care homes. I say an iterative approach because how this works is that we look at the literature, we develop an idea, we take it out and we discuss it with a context expert group who tell us whether we've got it right or not. And then based upon the recommendations they make, we go back to the literature and we have another look. And we do this process over and over again until what we're finding in the literature and what we're hearing from a context expert group sort of align and make sense. There was evidence in the literature that comprehensive geriatric assessment could improve outcomes. Now, this is not a systematic review, so this is, you know, I'm not going to line these up in a statistical way that you would be used to be seeing in a forest plot if you're the type of person that likes systematic reviews. But there was evidence within the literature that the people that received comprehensive geriatric assessment were more satisfied, that there was at times statistically significant changes in healthcare resource use, particularly interestingly less use of outpatient services. Emergency services didn't seem to be affected in much of the literature that we consulted. There was definitely evidence that prescribing patterns could be changed by comprehensive geriatric assessment, and there were a few studies that used a tool called the International Resident Assessment Instrument and some quality measures that were embedded within that, and they suggested that where you had CGA, the care tended to be of a higher quality. The number of quality markers went up. But I think the most important thing we were able to do by really taking this detailed approach to the literature was start to really piece together what comprehensive geriatric assessment looks like in care homes. And this is our programme theory. This pulls together everything that we found in the literature. And what it really says is that if you're going to do comprehensive geriatric assessment in care homes, you need to have attention to three parts of how you deliver your service. The first is that you will need detailed assessment, taking on board the input of multidisciplinary teams. You'll then need a way of gathering together the findings of those multidisciplinary teams in order to develop a care plan. And then you need some mechanism of taking what's in the care home plan and actually making sure that it's delivered. Yeah? And if you just have one of those bits, you've not got comprehensive geriatric assessment. You need to have all three. But actually, the devil's in the detail here. There was lots of really interesting things that started to come out about what's specific to care homes. Because if I drew comprehensive geriatric assessment for most settings, it would look a bit like this. But actually, there's some devil in the detail of how this operates in care homes. The first thing in care homes is that if you have a multidisciplinary team, it's not made up of one team that sits in one place and you know always meets on a regular basis. You might have a doctor who's available in an afternoon, who's a general practitioner, and a community-based physio who's available in another day, and a community-based pharmacist who's available a week later. So unlike what happens in hospital or in rehabilitation settings, this is asynchronous comprehensive geriatric assessment. Different bits of it are happening at different times. And the challenge when you've got that asynchronous piece of work is then finding a way of getting all of those findings together and pulling them together in a way that the team can meet and make sense of it. There were two real approaches to that, and there's a big part of this literature that came from that thing that I mentioned before, the International Resident Assessment Instrument. That's a tool initially developed in America and Canada to describe the health status of older people living in care homes and how healthcare is delivered to them, and it's a structured assessment tool. And a lot of this literature came from the InterRI group, who are a big research group, saying our structured assessment tool works. But the interesting thing when you really started to pick away at that literature was that the structured assessment tool was often completed by one member of staff. and we started to get the impression that that one member of staff could complete all the variables, but it wasn't really clear from the literature how they then triggered subsequent actions in response to that. And so we phoned in to write people up, and we said, what we're sort of getting from your articles is that one nurse completes the forms, but then when she's completed the forms, she finds it difficult to get a doctor or a therapist to come and help her. Is that true? And they said, yeah, that's probably about true, actually. That's how it works in the real world. So there's this idea that we have a highly structured assessment tool. It will be completed, but will it trigger the necessary behaviours to carry on with the comprehensive geriatric assessment process? The counterfactual for that were studies which reported on much less structured approaches to care, where a doctor would come in and do their own assessment, a nurse would come in and do their own assessment, and a therapist would come in and do their own assessment. And what we tended to get from that literature was that the assessment was maybe a bit more chaotic, it was a bit less standardised, different people would bring different bits in to how they were doing the assessment, but because each professional owned their own assessment, it was much easier to get them to sit down at a table at the end and actually work out what the next stage was going to be. I think there's a couple more things that's worth saying about this diagram. The first is that there's a bit of a gap in the middle. There were lots of different ways reported of bringing teams together to allow them to construct a care plan. But really, and we went back and we looked for this several times, the voice of the resident and the voice of the resident's family was frequently missing from that. Now, either that meant that it wasn't designed in, or everybody that was writing these reports took it so much for granted that they didn't think to make it explicit, but the voice of the resident and the voice of the resident's family were missing from this care planning process, and that's quite an important omission for a literature that's often talking about being about person-centred approaches to care. Yeah. The second part is that the literature is very thin on the right-hand side of the diagram. So because much of this comes from people that have got a real sort of intellectual engagement in developing assessment tools, most of the literature is about the assessment tools, what's in them and how to use them, and less of it is about how to turn that into concrete action and actually care managing care plan going forward. And that's a big gap that we need to learn how to fill. So it's given us a useful diagram, but it's also given us, you know, a real idea of where we need to go for future research here, which is that we need to know, if we've got this sort of asynchronous CGA process going on, we need to develop ways to make sense of that, collate the findings and share the findings in a systematic way. We need to find better ways to involve residents and family carers in the CGA process and make that explicit in the CGA process. And more work really needed to understand how CGA is sustained and implemented over time and how it iterates. Too much focus has been on the first half of that diagram, the assessment, and not enough focus on how it flows into care. So by this point we had our dashboards, so we had a way of collecting data, and we had our insights into how comprehensive geriatric assessment should be done. And so the question was, could we get people to go and do it? And this is where we came to this idea of quality improvement collaboratives. Quality improvement collaboratives are things that are increasingly gaining traction in healthcare. They initially came from the United States. They are now gaining quite a lot of traction in the NHS. They're a way of bringing different stakeholders together to try to improve care. And they take a lot of sort of parts that are built into quality improvement, like measurement for change, making a change, learning from your change, iterating forward to actually give people a structure so that they can improve things. And we brought together quality improvement collaboratives from four areas of South Nottinghamshire, the four CCGs that I mentioned before. And for those of you that don't know the geography of South Nottinghamshire, that's Nottingham City, which is the hole in the middle of a donut, and then the three CCGs that sit around it. So this is the whole southern chunk of Nottinghamshire County, if you were to look at it on the map. And the reason we work with those four CCGs is, well, we had a historical relationship with them, but also the four CCGs that tended to plan strategically as one block, because they all feed into one teaching hospital in the south of Nottinghamshire, so we knew that we could get them to work together. And we got them to, we initially approached commissioners at the CCG level, and we said we want to pull together quality improvement collaboratives, and this is who we want to be on it. We want at least representatives from two care homes, we want at least two lay representatives, we want someone who's from a commissioning background so that they're not going to hold us back, we want someone from a healthcare provider management background so they're not going to hold us back, and we want three or four members of frontline staff who routinely deliver healthcare to care homes, and we'll bring them along and we'll engage them in this collaborative. And then we gave them training in how comprehensive geriatric assessment worked. We gave them some training in quality improvement methodology. And you'll see that this took place over time. So we brought them together in May, then they met again in September 2016, March 2017, September 2017, and then had their final meeting in February 2018. And every time they came together, they'd have said, well, we've been away and we've tried to do something around comprehensive geriatric assessment, and this is the progress we've made, these are the barriers we've faced. And someone in the other CCG group would say, well, that's interesting because I face similar barriers, and we tend to try to tackle these problems together and work forward. And that's how quality improvement collaboratives are supposed to work. And I think what was really quite useful was we used a number of methodologies from Professor Julianne Mayer, who's in the audience, second from back on the left-hand side there, who's had a long track record of working with care homes and really knows how to work with care homes so that they don't feel threatened or intimidated or got at when we're working with them. She might choose different language, I'm sure she'll correct me at the end. But this approach called appreciative inquiry starts from what people do well rather than starting from what people do wrongly. And that was quite critical. And because of that, I think we actually kept traction with the care home staff members, and they stayed with the project and were really enthusiastic for it throughout. So we had four different quality improvement collaboratives. Each of them chose to do slightly different things. We asked them to do comprehensive geriatric assessment. We described it the way that I described it to you. And the fascinating thing was only two of them did. So even though we specify we want you to do care, which is a bit structured assessment and care delivery and iterative care management, and we want you to do a project around that in your area, and then we can measure whether it impacts upon patient care and outcomes, only two of them did something that we would recognise as comprehensive geriatric assessment. Okay. One of the teams decided to do something that looks very much like textbook comprehensive geriatric assessment. They said when a new care home resident comes into the care home, we'll have a multidisciplinary team meeting where we'll pull together all the health and social care information we have about them. If we then need to trigger any specific assessments, people will go off to the care home and meet them, and then we'll discuss them at the general practitioner's virtual ward round. Sounds very much like the assessment component of comprehensive geriatric assessment. The interesting thing about that group was they got stuck. Okay, they did it once, and then they got stuck. And the reason was they did it once, and they sat down with a template to start completing their comprehensive geriatric assessment template. And they said, oh, this template doesn't work, so we need a new computer template. And it must be embedded in our computer system and all singing and all dancing and completely perfect before we'll move forward. So we went off and we facilitated this, and we got an IT expert to come and design a computer template and install it on the system. And they said, well, it's still not quite right. You need to design it again. And this carried on ad nauseum. And we never really got past the first assessment. And that was quite interesting because they were never entirely satisfied with what the computer expert was doing, and they were focusing a lot of their effort on the things that were out with their control in this model rather than focusing on things that were within their control. The second group that tried to do comprehensive geriatric assessment were much more successful. They were from the Nottingham City area. They had already spent a lot of money and time over the preceding 3 or 4 years effectively embedding comprehensive geriatric assessment in care homes at the point of arrival in care homes. But what they said is that there's a group of people who tend to deteriorate after time, and what we're going to do is we're going to go meet with care home managers and say, who are you worried about? Who do you think might be having healthcare problems? And then restarting the comprehensive geriatric assessment on those people. And they worked with residential homes and nursing homes and did a number of comprehensive geriatric assessments and really felt it was working and enhancing the service that they were delivering. But the most interesting thing was the teams that made the most progress were the ones that didn't do what we told them. And this is why it's good to do research, right? So group said, well, we're not going to do any of that really complex multidisciplinary stuff with computer things that we can't influence because it's out with our sphere of influence. Why are we going to try and do things that are really complicated and difficult to implement? Why don't we start doing something that we just know will make a difference? So we're going to start doing, we've got this community pharmacist, she's got some spare time, she developed a template for medication assessment. Why don't we just unleash her and use this as an opportunity for her to go and start doing medication assessments of people living in care homes? And he did that. And she went into many more care homes than the other two CCGs put together. She met lots of residents. And after a while, she said, well, I can't do this by myself because I keep coming up against medical problems that I need to discuss with a GP. So I'm now going to organise to meet the GP in the care home. And so after a while, she would then phone ahead and she'd meet the GP in the care home. And then she said, oh, but there are some nursing issues around tissue viability and continence and stuff that I feel that I really need some specialist nursing input in. So I'm going to meet the nurse practitioner in the care home. And suddenly she'd gone from a really narrow initiative where it sounded like she didn't know what wasn't doing what we wanted her to do, to something where she had multidisciplinary team doing complex assessment, and it started to look an awful lot like comprehensive geriatric assessment. And the last group did something very similar. They started off with a dietitian who had the same adventure, started off doing dietetic assessments and realised that medications were interacting with the dietetic assessments, so she needed to meet the pharmacist, and so on. And so you can get a flavour that the people that started narrow were the people that actually made the most progress. The people that tried to do it all at once were the people that struggled. Now, we are, you saw those context, mechanism, outcome configurations before. We've almost got them right. We're working on the paper on a nightly basis at the moment, and rather than present to you CMOs that aren't quite finished, I'm just going to give you some insights from the work that are driving the CMOs that we're working. Here are some important things we found. General practitioners are really important, but we can't work out why. Okay, the power of a general practitioner to make or break an initiative is really quite evident. There were times when, without a GP's permission, things would just fall down, or GP's engagement, things would just fall down. At its most stark, there was an example where a general practitioner was sitting in a multidisciplinary planning meeting. Everybody was talking furiously. The GP's mobile went. He left the room, and everybody checked their email for 10 minutes. And then the GP came back, and everybody put their mobile down and carried on. And so there was something about the power of GPs within these groups that's really interesting. And we're starting a piece of realist reviewing on the literature on the role of general practitioners and improvement in the community to understand this a bit more. There was definitely a problem of innovation saturation, and one of the areas in particular, the area that we thought would have been best at this, because they've been doing lots of improvement initiatives up to this point, they just had no more capacity to take anything on. And I think, you know, people that are steeped in improvement would say, well, we should have checked readiness for change before we started, and maybe we should have. But there is this idea that you need to take account of how ready a system is to take additional work on, or you won't make any progress. There was definitely this idea of improvement inertia, where people would hang all their hopes on one thing that was going to save the whole improvement initiative. That computer system that I gave you as an example is a very key example of that, where they just get stuck as they try to improve stuff. And there's something about the need to find a way to get past that impasse. There was a real sense that where projects aligned with existing goals, they made progress much more quickly. So CGA worked in the area where they were already doing CGA and were adding it as an enhancement. The pharmacy project worked because that was what the area already wanted to do, and they were just crying out for an opportunity to do it. The importance of existing relationships with care homes was really important. The areas that made the most progress, the pharmacist, the dietitian, the care home team that did CGA, already had relationships with care homes in their area, so didn't have to spend time building those relationships up, and that seemed to be really important. And the importance of care homes as equal partners. I spoke about appreciative inquiry, but we spent a lot of time making sure that people worked in a way that the care homes were recognised and treated with respect, and that seemed to be really essential when it came to gaining credibility and traction in the sector. Focusing on what's within people's sphere of influence is really important. So this idea of sending people off to implement complex multidisciplinary models when actually they can't influence all the moving parts of the machine is perhaps not sensible, which leads me to my next point, that where people started simple, they did better. Where they were sticking to this really complex intervention, which was comprehensive geriatric assessment, they often got a bit lost. Now, some of that's because it's complicated and difficult to enact. But some of that's because it's actually quite difficult to understand. And there were several examples where we'd explain comprehensive geriatric assessment, we'd show people the flow diagrams, we'd give them the articles, and they'd come back at the next thing going, I think we're just about ready to do our implementation now, but we still haven't got our head around what this comprehensive geriatric assessment is. And one of the reasons for that is it overlaps with lots of things that people do already. So people who were rehabilitationists by background were saying, well, that just sounds a bit like the rehabilitation model to me. People who were palliative care by background were saying, well, that just sounds a bit like good palliative care. GPs who were very holistic in their care model said, well, that just sounds like, you know, good primary care. So they were looking for something that was different from what they already knew, because it was rarefied and introduced to them as new and conceptually novel. And actually, the fact that it overlapped with what they were already doing made it very difficult for them to get their head around. And this last bit's important. We didn't get any uptake on the dashboard. So the dashboard's been implemented in lots of other ways, but we didn't get any uptake from the actual improvement teams that were doing the improvement initiatives. They weren't actually that interested in it. We invited them to lots of co-design meetings, and they didn't come. And a couple of quotes illuminate this quite well. One was from a general practitioner saying, why do we need data? We know this is going to work. Yeah. And the other one was from a nurse working in the care home sector, which was, data is always too much like extra work. Having to sit down and get my head around that is like extra work. So, you know, it's what I gain from it is outweighed by what I lose from it. Yeah. So what we as people that are steeped in this world of improvement take for granted, that people will always be crying out for more data, is not the reality on the ground. So what's next? Well, we've got a few things that we need to do with the project. We're going to complete this programme theory on improvement, collaboratives and care homes. The article's so very, very close to being complete. It's just at that stage where you're in iterative qualitative research, where it's bouncing backwards and forwards between a few co-authors, so we can make sure that we've really justified what we're saying in it. We've already started work on a dissemination video explaining how to do comprehensive geriatric assessment, working through that narrative of how CGA should be done in the care home sector in a way that people can make sense of it. And then the last piece of work we've still got to do is about this thing called the stepped wedge. And I can't remember if anybody in the audience was on the funding panel for this grant, but if they are, they'll be wondering why I've not said anything about the stepped wedge so far. And that's because it's the part we've learned an awful lot from it, but it might be the part that really we can't report much constructive back about. Okay. If you want to look up what our statistical analysis plan looks like, it's on the East Midlands Research and Ageing Network discussion paper series. A link is on the board. Feel free to take pictures or Google it. You have to be careful when you put the word MRAN into the system. There is an Indian actor who's also called MRAN, quite a handsome guy. So if you spell it rightly, you'll get to our website and you'll be able to see that. But within our statistical analysis plan, we'd initially said where we were delivering improvement collaboratives, we would ask the staff to go out and deliver the improvement collaboratives to one home at a time. Yeah, so we would ask them to say, do improvement in home one month, improvement in home two, next month, improvement in home three, next month. And alongside that, we would collect some NHS data, some time series data, which would allow us to understand what was going on. But we'd also collect additional data on how people were using health services, using something called the Client Service Receipt Inventory, CSRI, using about its satisfaction, using this thing called the How Are You, which is illustrated there, and also measure their quality of life using something called the EQ5D. Few reasons this didn't work so well. And the first one was this. We developed a sub-study to just make sure that EQ5D would work well in the population. This was a peach study, so the sub-study was called the apricot study. And apricot does spell something, but for a moment it's not on the tip of my tongue, so apologies for that. But the apricot study basically said, if we use this EQ5D in this How Are You, does it work well in the care home setting? If we ask care home residents how they're feeling, and then we ask staff how they're feeling, and we compare the two, is there any meaningful comparison? And and the reason for doing this is that these are actually conceptually quite difficult things to grapple with, and many care home residents have cognitive impairment. So we did this, and we showed that for 4 out of the 5 domains that are in the EQ5D quality of life tool, there was only slight agreement between staff opinions of what people's quality of life were like and what their own opinion was of what their quality of life was like. And in every domain of the How Are You, there was slight to no agreement. Okay, so these tools that we were initially using to measure the outcomes are intrinsically flawed in this setting. Even the proxy responses in this setting don't work the way they do in community settings, and that's probably because the types of relationships that care home staff have with older people with dementia is different from the types of relationships that their family carers living at home with them would have. Yeah. And we may need to do some work to develop some more care home specific quality of life measures. But there were other problems with the step wedge as well. I'm just going to finish in a minute. I'm aware of my time. I don't know where she is. I'm aware of my time. She's nicely positioned behind my screen there. So the problems with the step wedge. This sort of idea of doing getting a clinical service to follow a randomization sequence so you can measure the outcomes was, I'm just going to say it now, impossible. Because every time we asked them to do it, they would agree to do it, and then they would phone us up the week after and go, there's a perfectly good reason that I've not gone into home X and I've gone into home Y instead. And sometimes that would be a clinical need. Well, I had to go into home Y anyway because Mrs. Smith had decompensated, and as I'd crossed the threshold, I thought it was more sensible for me to be there, or home X was closed due to diarrhoea. Yeah. So actually, in the real world, getting people to follow a randomization sequence is very difficult. That was ambitious. It was always going to be ambitious, and in retrospect, you might be uncharitable and call it naive. And the micro cue machine stopped working, so I'm going to press the forward button. The second thing is that where you're gathering non-routine data like the EQ5D and the CSRI, it's always going to be really, really, really labour-intensive in care homes. And I've been a care home researcher for a decade now, and I thought I could use every tool in my box to make sure that this was not going to be as labour-intensive as it turned out to be. But it's really difficult because you've got people with cognitive impairment who are often socially removed from their families, and actually getting the consent and various bits and bobs in place in order to do the work is really challenging and really hard work. And the last thing is that for I've already told you the problems with the EQ5D and the how are you, how are we. We've got all that time series data that we've been collecting using the algorithm from hospitals, but event counts are actually really small. Contrary to the narrative that care home residents go into hospital all the time, they don't. A small rump of care home residents go into hospital quite frequently, but the bulk of care home residents don't go into hospital that often. We're about the third or fourth study to find that now. And actually, the event counts are so small that even with the time series data, you might struggle to get statistical significance. So with that, I've bombarded you with so much information, and when I sat down to write this talk, I thought, God, how am I going to fill 40 minutes? We don't seem to have done much. And then I realised that we'd done quite a lot, and that's why I've run over slightly. But the take-home messages are, let's start with the negative ones, leading on from what I said at the end, because it's always good to finish on a positive. I still get involved in conversations on a not infrequent basis where people say, well, what you need to just diffuse all of this is a proper randomised controlled trial of comprehensive geriatric assessment in care homes to show that it works. And that's just probably not going to work. And I think we probably knew already why it wasn't going to work, but I think now we really know, yeah, which is all that qualitative data we've got about CGA overlapping with good palliative care and good rehabilitation care and good primary care means that there is no clear blue water between what is comprehensive of geriatric assessment and what is routine care. So you've got no real comparator arm in any form of randomised controlled trial. As I've already shown you, clustered randomised controlled trials in this setting are difficult, and step wedges are nigh on impossible. And the outcome measures that could support a trial have not yet been established. Things like EQ5D and how are you that might be able to be put into cost effectiveness analyses just don't exist. So I think that when people come to me now saying what we need is a randomised controlled trial of CGA in this setting, I think we now know that that is not the solution. Let's finish on some positives, though. The algorithm means that accurate real-time data on care home admissions is now a reality. I've shown you what the dashboards look like, and we're taking that dashboard work forward through the work of the Applied Research Collaboration, which is the Clark successor, to see if we can get that embedded, and certainly in the Nottinghamshire area. We can now describe how to do CGA in care homes. We've got that beautiful diagram in multiple colours that shows you how to do it, and we'll soon have a video that tells you how to do it. And I think that's really helpful. You know, at least when people come and say, what do you mean by comprehensive geriatric assessment? We now have that really good diagram we can show them, and we now will have a really good video that we can show them what to do. And the last thing I think we've learned is that quality improvement collaborators can work in this space, but they need to focus on things that are more straightforward than CGA. And I think that we're now, as we're finishing off that project, establishing a set of five or six rules about how you would run a quality improvement collaborative in this setting. And I'm confident that next time that we go out to do this, and there will be a next time by some means, we'll know how to do it in such a way that people can make progress really quickly and start to make a difference. And with that, I will draw to a close. Thank you.